podcast to bring you insights of successful women leaders. I'm your host, Sherry Hilton, and whether you're a working professional looking to level up, an aspiring entrepreneur, or simply curious about the stories of women who are making a difference, this podcast is for you. Our guests come from diverse backgrounds and industries, but they all share one thing in common. They've overcome challenges and achieved success through hard work, determination, and a willingness to take risks. They will tell their personal journeys, the lessons they've learned along the way, and the wisdom they've gained. Join me each week as we dive into the experiences and perspectives of extraordinary women and discover the inspiration and motivation you need to achieve your own goals. So without further ado, let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Wisdom of Women. Today, our guest, Litza Marciano. She is a Jungian analyst, author, and podcaster. Today, we are going to talk about reclaiming your feminine fire. She is the author of not one, but two books. The first one was Motherhood, Facing and Finding Yourself. And the second one that just released not too long ago is The Vital Spark, Reclaim Your Outlaw Energies and Find Your Feminine Fire. Welcome, Litza, to the show. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you. Grateful. We are so excited about learning some of your insights from the book that you recently launched. You know, it's your second book. Mm-hmm. So clearly your early on, Motherhood, was what year did that release?
2021.
Okay, so not that long ago.
No.
So two quick books back to back. Tell us a little bit about the new recent book that just got published. Mm-hmm.
Well, it was something that really jumped out at me after we did an episode on my podcast called Fierce Female Initiations. And I have two other co-hosts on my podcast, and one of them is a man, a good friend of mine, obviously. And I just realized I had so much to say about women's initiations. And in particular, I had a lot to say about fairy tales that deal with female initiation. And I thought when I was done, I think there might be a book there. So one of the things that we do as Jungian analysts is call upon archetypal material like myths and fairy tales to explore universal human themes. And there are so many incredible fairy tales that feature female heroines doing incredible things. And if you look at them the right way, they can teach us a lot about our own psychology. So I use fairy tales in my first book, Motherhood, and also in this book as a way to explore the psychological journey of claiming agency and authority.
Yeah. So if the listeners don't know, you are on the faculty at C.G. Jung Institute in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. You know, my undergraduate is in psychology, so the name is very familiar. Yeah. I have a Bachelor of Science in psych with a minor in health sciences. And, you know, after that, I ended up getting my graduate degree. And early on, I wanted to go into psychology. Like, I loved learning about the mind and personalities and how we can relate to one another. You know, you relate women in the book to stories, you know, fairy tales, and it's about igniting the spark that's inside of us that we lose. Mm-hmm. Am I correct in that statement?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the way I see it is that it's a very normal thing to have certain aspects of yourself kind of dimmed. And I think it happens to men and women. Jung talked about this. Carl Jung was the psychologist who came up with this idea of the shadow, which is now pretty popular in the culture. And what Jung said is, yeah, when we're kids, we're told by our parents and our teachers that it's not okay to hit your sister. And so that kind of maybe aggressive impulse goes underground, and then that becomes part of your shadow. And it is normal that we lose access to certain impulses in the process of socialization, but we can lose access to important things that maybe have a lot of life in them. And one of the things I say sometimes is that in most families, there's one thing that you're never allowed to be. In some families, you're not allowed to be lazy. In other families, you're not allowed to be you're not allowed to be messy. You know, you can sort of think back to your family and think, what was the one thing that wasn't okay to be? In my family, it wasn't okay to be boastful. We had to be very humble all the time. And that meant that one of the things that's been in shadow for me is, you know, wanting to kind of claim center stage and look for some attention. So whenever I see anyone doing that, it's like fingernails on a chalkboard. And that's how I know that it's a shadow quality for me. So a lot of what gets split off into the shadow is incredibly enlivening. It's got a lot of life energy wrapped up in it. And as we, you know, get older and enter midlife, if we can get in touch with these qualities that we've been cut off from, we can be reconnected with really a vital, vivifying force.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. We experience it in childhood, so it's part of our upbringing. Do women also either experience different attributes that we internalize through our careers? You know, when we have management, you know, might say or do one thing, and then it builds on itself if we haven't worked it out from early on childhood? Or is it just that's that one thing that we really need to work on?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because there are certainly things, like I was saying, that we've been taught to hide away. And I think it's possible that women are discouraged more than, say, men from being certain things like aggressive, let's say. So there is a cultural component, but I suspect that there's also an innate component as well, that just as women, it's just harder for us to access aggression, for example. So, I mean, this kind of nature nurture debate is very entrenched, obviously, and I'm, you know, wasn't going to try to sort that out in the process of this book. But there is evidence, for example, across cultures and throughout the lifespan, that women are more interested in people and men are more interested in things. Yeah. And you can see this with newborn babies, I mean, hours old infants, and you can see this even in primates. So it seems like we might be women, we might be a little more hardwired to focus on people. And that is a wonderful thing, right? As women, we tend to be nurturing and caretaking. And that means that we can nurture our relationships, we can nurture our children. Being connected with other people and taking care of them is extremely valuable, obviously, for the culture, but also for us. It's usually the most meaningful thing that any of us do is our connection with other people and caring for other people. But if we can't access things like fieriness and forcefulness and desire and aggression and agency, we might get cut off from ourselves. So I do think there is a difference between men and women. I think it probably is, at least to some extent, innate. I think it gets kind of further emphasized by the culture. And then I think, as you're saying, I think the work environment tends often to reward qualities that maybe come more easily to men.
Yeah.
For example, being able to be a little bit disagreeable. You know, women are more agreeable than men on this personality trait, agreeableness. And again, this is kind of cross-cultural data. And being agreeable is a wonderful thing, but being able to sometimes be disagreeable might mean that you can, say, advocate for yourself better in the workplace.
Yeah.
So it's a complex phenomenon, I think.
Yeah. And I think of whomever you're speaking to, the way they interpret how you said it or what you said can be either a disagreement or can come across differently. Mm-hmm. Just coming from a woman sometimes.
Yeah.
So how did you get into writing these books and basing them on fairy tales? Just that podcast and that spark came up and you said, I really think I need to dive into this a little bit more.
Well, I knew I wanted to write a book ever since I knew what a book was, I think. And, you know, when I was in analytic training to become an analyst, which is a very long process, I also had small children. And that's, you know, sort of the birth of my first book, Motherhood, Facing and Finding Yourself. And it is pretty common as a Jungian to work with fairy tales. And I am particularly fond of fairy tales. So I knew I wanted to use them. And, you know, fairy tales helped me think. So the first book took a long time and grew out of this dual experience I was having of training to become an analyst while raising my children. This next book just kind of jumped out at me. I was like, wow, I have a lot to say about that. I think there's a book there. And then I just was off to the races and wrote it in about 11 months. So it was a very different phenomenon than the first book, which I wrote over many years.
Tell us a little bit about one of the fairy tales.
So there's so many great fairy tales in the book, and I'll just hold it up here. So one of the great ones is the Frog King, which you might be familiar with, but you may not know the Grimm's ending, the German version. So just really quickly, there is a pretty little princess. She has this beautiful golden ball. She's tossing it up in the air and playing with it as she sits beside a well. And then she drops it into the well and it sinks. And she's crying, oh! And a frog comes up and says, Princess, why are you crying? And the princess says, I've dropped my beautiful golden ball into the well. And he said, well, I'll go get it for you. You just have to take me back to the palace, let me eat off your little gold plate and put me on your little silk pillow and let me sleep next to you at night. So the princess is like, yeah, whatever you want. So the frog gets the gold ball and the princess is so happy. She squeals, she grabs the ball and she goes running off to the palace. And the frog says, Princess, wait for me. But she doesn't even, there's no backward glance. So she's eating dinner that night with her father, the king, and she hears squish, 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 and someone's knocking at the door. She goes to see who it is, and it's the frog. She goes back to the dinner table. She doesn't look very happy. Her father says, well, who was that? And so she says, oh, there was this frog, and I kind of promised him, you know, and he did me this favor, and he said, you have to keep your promise. So she goes and she gets the frog and she carries him in with two fingers and she puts him down on the table and he eats off her plate and she's just disgusted. And then he said, I'm tired now. Let's go to bed. So she carries him, you know, like he's radioactive into her bedroom. And then he says, put me on your pillow. And she's so disgusted by the thought of that slimy little frog being asleep on her beautiful silk pillow that she takes it and she throws him against the wall with all of her might. And when he hits the wall, the splat, he turns into the handsome prince.
Wow.
And then they live happily ever after. There's a little bit more of the tale, but that's really the resolution. So a lot of people don't know that version. They think it's, you know, the French version that you kiss the frog. Yeah. But no, the in the German version, you throw the frog against the wall. And what I love about that is, you know, it's like if you're a pretty princess and you've been trained to be very nice and you've been trained to be very kind, you know, you might act very sweet a lot of the time, but sometimes you want to throw the frog against the wall. And it's when we do that, that we can connect with this authenticity that allows for transformation to happen. So that's an example of how I work with the fairy tales in the book.
I love that story.
It's great, isn't it?
That is a great fairy tale. And so many women that have been on the podcast talk about coming to a point in their life where they've shifted either in careers or in geography of where they lived or finally dug deep for some of the childhood dreams that were never realized and how much their life transformed because of it. Because they found their authentic self. They found their voice. They began doing some of the things that they were fearful of doing for imposter syndrome or what others' opinions would be of them. Mm-hmm. And they came out of their shell. And so is that what a lot of the stories discuss in the book?
Yes, I think that that's a good summation of the different stories, the fairy tales, my own stories, the client stories, of really digging down and figuring out what do I really want? And what do I need to do to make that happen? And not worry so much about who's going to be upset with me, whose feelings might I hurt if I speak my mind. But what would happen if I just got really connected with myself and my own goals and allowed myself to put those first?
Now, do you teach classes at the Institute that help women do that? Or is it just solely based on psychology, methodology, and the Jungian? What type of classes do you teach?
Well, the Jung Institute of Philadelphia is a training institute. So we have a Jung seminar for the general public, for people who are really deeply interested in Jung and want to spend a year diving deep. But we also have a training program. So if you're a psychologist or a therapist or a mental health professional and you want to become a Jungian analyst, you can do so at the Philadelphia Jung Institute, as with other institutes across the country. And so I teach the candidates, but I do have an online women's fairy tale group where we explore a different fairy tale every month. Actually, we're doing the Frog Prince starting in March.
Oh, wow.
And we read the fairy tale together, and then I post prompts and we have discussions and a live event. And it's really great. It's called spinningstraw.com. So if you're interested more in exploring fairy tales psychologically with other women, you can check that out.
That sounds like a real interesting, just online, fun community, where it's a group of women discussing, you know, similarities, interpretations mm-hmm. of the fairy tale experiences, which I feel there's so many women who don't have a space where they can share.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So that's important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I suppose that in some sense, every book is a bit of a confession. And I do think that it was hard for me to claim my agency and authority. I went to undergraduate, and then I cycled through a couple careers. I worked in my 20s. I worked as a school teacher for a little while, and then I also worked in international relief and refugee assistance. So I worked in Bosnia in the 90s.
Wow.
But then I thought I really felt called actually to try to become a Jungian analyst, which was not an easy thing. And I had to go back and get a graduate degree in mental health, which I did. And then I've worked as a therapist since 1998. And started analytic training in 2003. And I have had to contend with maybe my tendency to be nice or my tendency to cut myself off from my anger. And, whether that was, in my family and, gosh, is it okay to prioritize myself sometimes, or do the kids always have to come first? Or even just professionally, I mean, there have been things that I've seen going on professionally that I didn't agree with. And then I had to think, am I going to take a stand? Am I going to be disagreeable, or am I going to go along with what everyone else is saying? And it felt like too important. So I thought, no, I need to kind of stand up and say, I think this thing that we're doing isn't such a good idea. So it's a work in progress. I'm, a few years shy of 60, but I still have a ways to go.
Yeah.
to fully claim my agency and authority, but I'm working on it.
Yeah. So what happened in those situations where you stepped up in your corporate America and expressed your opinion when you knew deep down inside it didn't settle with you?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the biggest takeaway, and I do talk about this in the book, is letting yourself know what you know. there have been many times in my life, personally and professionally, where I knew something was wrong and I let myself be talked out of that knowledge or let myself be convinced that it didn't really matter. But I was right. I was right. And those times, you know, early on that I let myself be talked out of them, you know, I felt like I betrayed myself. In one instance, I felt like I badly betrayed my kid because I didn't listen to myself. I didn't take what I knew seriously. And so that is one thing that I can say that I'm better at now. When I get that, just that internal sense that this something is not right, I believe it now. And even if doing so brings risks with it, I'm not ever going to let myself be talked out of my own knowing again.
Yeah. I think that's something, wisdom that every woman can take away from this podcast, that we all have that inner voice, that intuition that speaks to us at times where we just know something doesn't feel right. And we sometimes minimize it or ignore it, and it gets louder and louder, or we look back and realize, had I only expressed myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you looked at prioritizing yourself in motherhood, how did that change things? Because as moms, you know, you mentioned, you know, the kids don't always have to come first, and that was a hard lesson for you to learn. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of moms out there listening, and I know we all struggle with making sure the kids have everything they need and running them around to their games and practices and school functions and what have you. And we're at that bottom of the totem pole, but there's been so many guests on here who've talked about self-care and how important it is. What was your takeaway and learnings from that piece?
Well, I think for me, I have a tendency, like a lot of women, I think, to try to do a lot of emotional caregiving and accommodating. So when someone in my family, whether it was my husband or one of my kids, was in a bad, you know, in a bad mood or having a bad day, I tend to just become like, I think about it sometimes like the stage manager. Like I'm going to go and kind of remove obstacles to make sure that you don't get in a worse mood. I'm going to see if I can smooth ruffled feathers. And it's really not a good way to live. It's not good for me, certainly. It's also not good for them. You know, yeah. I'm not saying that anyone was asking me to do this. And I mean, I understand why I did it, but it would have been so much better if I'd done less of that and just, you know, okay, so somebody's in a bad mood. So my daughter and my husband are going to have a fight, you know, and it's not my job to rescue them from that, you know?
Yeah.
So I just think I did so much of that and it didn't serve anyone.
Yeah. Great advice. So when you're with women and you're focusing on your book, what are the top three insights and suggestions that you can provide the listeners and touch on when it comes to reclaiming that inner fire?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I found when I've spoken about my book is that a lot of women find it really challenging. So I have 8 qualities that I suggest are hard for women to get in touch with, and that it might be important to get in touch with, and they're disagreeableness, shrewdness, trickster energy, desire, sexuality, anger, authority, and ruthlessness.
Wow.
And I've had women say, well, I like what you're saying, but I would never want to be ruthless. I think that's a terrible thing. I think we should be discouraging people from being ruthless. And then, you know, I'll talk about it a little bit more. And I'll say, well, I what I mean by that is just being able to do sort of the hard thing that might make another person unhappy, but it's in the interest of wholeness and growth. And, you know, I could give a little example of that if you like.
Yeah,
I was in my 20s, I was seeing a psychologist. It was not working for me. It just wasn't the right fit. But I was very nice and I didn't want to hurt her feelings. So it took me a long time to say, you know, this is just not really working for me. And around that time, I had this dream that I was driving in the car with Tony Soprano. And Tony Soprano was, you know, if something needed to be done, Tony was going to do it, even if it meant, killing a good friend. You know, Tony could be ruthless. And my dream maker was using this kind of funny, over the top image of Tony Soprano saying, you know, Lisa, you got to go in there and do the hit job. You know, what are you doing? You're going there every week. You're paying this woman money. This is not serving you. It's not a good fit. Just go in there and, you know, bang, bang. So, you know, but that was hard for me because I felt like I needed to take care of her feelings. And I, you know, which of course is ridiculous. That was my therapy. It should have been about what served me. So that's what I mean by ruthlessness. And sometimes when I talk about it like that, people go, oh, okay, now I get it.
Perfect sense.
So I think, you know, when you said that the top three is, you know, don't be afraid to explore some of these things that seem like they're really forbidden. You know, another one, people have trouble with this trickster energy. People are like, aren't you encouraging people to be manipulative? It's like, well, you know, there are times when that's entirely appropriate. And being a trickster, being able to access trickster energy has literally saved my life at times. And
give us an example of that one.
Well, I mean, you know, you know, walking somewhere at night and having a guy, you know, come up from behind and, you know, you just say, oh, well, let's just wait till we get to, you know, this place over there and then get to a place where I can make a run for it or something like that. Yeah. So, and I mean, I think most women have been in a frightening situation where maybe she was able to, you know, think quickly and use her wits and get herself to a safer place.
Yeah, that's a great scenario. Mm-hmm. So when you're in your monthly sessions, what is some of the feedback from the women with the growth that they've seen after the fairy tale of that month and talking about it? Mm-hmm. They come back and give feedback. Like, what are some of the stories that you've heard?
Yeah, really, really amazing stories. I mean, I think that, you know, so like I said, we'll discuss a tale and I'll post prompts and I'll read the prompts that people post and they'll say things like, you know, I didn't realize until right this minute, I didn't make the connection between the thing that my dad used to do and how that used to make me feel and this thing I've been doing my whole life that is really holding me back. And so, you know, fairy tales give us another lens in. They give us another way to think about it and we can find this deeper level of integration and insight. Yeah. And people just find it, like you said, really beautiful and fun too. It's inspiring.
Yeah, it seems fun. Mm-hmm. You know, there's women who go through life and this is just a fun way to incorporate something that a fairy tale that we learned in childhood and the meaning behind it in a slightly different way and relating it to our life so that we gain something out of it without actually, you know, taking the time. It's like a mini therapy session.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is.
That's great. So what other, do you offer any other classes, anything else, like your website? You do have your podcast. Tell us a little bit about the podcast too.
Yeah. So this Jungian Life is three of us. The three of us are Jungian analysts and we'll pick a variety of topics. So at one week recently for the week of Valentine's Day, we talked about unrequited love, for example, but it could be anything from social, you know, what social media is doing to us to, you know, how to end therapy, for example, how to say goodbye to your therapist, lots of wide variety of topics. And we discuss it very casually from a depth psychological lens. And then at the end, we interpret a listener's dream. So you can submit your dream to the podcast and we might pick it and discuss it. And we also have a 12-month online program called Dream School, where we teach you how to work with your dreams, because dreams are another very important part of Jungian therapy.
That is interesting. You know, as growing up, I learned at a very young age that your dreams, if you pay attention to them, they can help you, guide you, predict things that, you know, would happen in your life or help you answer that question you're struggling with or, you know, what should we be doing when we have those memorable, vivid dreams? Because, you know, some nights you sleep and you really, you wake up and you don't have any. And it might be menopause days when you're barely sleeping and you're not getting into that deep rhythm of sleep where you actually have the vivid dreams. Because I know there for a stint, toddler years and perimenopause, you don't sleep too much. And so your brain's not getting those deep wavelengths of sleep to really get into those dreams. But I find when we do have those vivid dreams, if I don't wake up and write them down, within minutes, I have forgotten some of the most important details.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, writing your dreams down as soon as you wake up is really important if you're interested in cultivating a relationship with your dream life. So, and even just writing them down, even if you don't do anything else, think of the storehouse you have. I've been keeping a dream journal for decades, and I'm so grateful that I have a record of all these incredible images.
And how do we use those dreams and images to help us? Like, what are they trying to tell us?
Well, I think that dream interpretation is difficult. And, you know, I'm not going to be able to give you too much right now because it's hard, but even just being curious about them. So for example, the little dream I shared a few minutes ago about Tony Soprano, it's not like I knew what that was right away. I had to sit with it and think about it and who is Tony Soprano and what would that mean? And where is that in my life? And I actually do have another book coming out in a few months called Dreamwise. The keys to unlock the meaning of your dreams. So you can find that book and that will help. And you can also check out the podcast where you can hear us interpret a listener's dream every week. And then also check out our online dream school, which you can find at thisjungianlife.com.
That is great advice because there's times, so, you know, we're used to Google, right? So we'll have a dream and you immediately go to Google and what does this mean in my dream? And it plops up a plethora of answers. But I don't think we step back and sit with it and analyze it and think about it as much as we should. You know, we grab the first one or two that popped up and read whichever one it was that sounds right or fits us, and we just go with that one.
Well, and the thing is that your dream maker makes the dream just for you. And so there isn't a kind of generalizable, you know, if you dream of a donut, it means something is missing from your life. You know, it's like, well, what is a donut to you? Yeah. And so when I had my little dream of Tony Soprano, it's like, well, what do I think about Tony Soprano? You know, what's my opinion about Tony Soprano and what's my relationship with that kind of energy and where would that be in my life and that kind of thing.
So women, if you want to ignite your fire, I think there's lots of lessons in this book. And I think the fairy tale aspect just makes it fun and exciting to read through and really learn about yourself and how to be more authentic and heal from some of those things in our childhood. So how can our listeners get a hold of you? What's the best way to follow you and get to your website?
So my website, my author website is lisamarciano.com. The podcast website is thisjungianlife.com. And you can find me on Instagram at Lisa Marciano or at, I think it's This Jungian Life Podcast.
Yeah. And I'll make sure it's in the show notes when it's all detailed out. Before we end our podcast today, I have a few questions that I ask all of my guests. Okay. The first one is, what are you most proud of?
Wow. I'm really proud of my books. Like I said, it's sort of been a lifelong goal and I wasn't sure it was going to happen. And it took a lot of persistence to do it. And I'm just really proud that I stuck with it and didn't give up.
Yeah. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Well, very similar to what I said before, I would say, don't doubt yourself. Trust yourself. Trust what you know.
Yeah. What brings Lisa joy?
baking sourdough bread.
Ooh. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
What are a few tips of wisdom you can leave with the listeners regarding your book, or just some hot topics off the top of your head?
Mm-hmm. Well, don't be afraid to be curious. Be curious about yourself. Be curious about your inner life. Be curious about people that you agree with. Be curious about the ideas that you agree with, and be curious about things that you don't agree with, people that you don't agree with, and ideas that you don't agree with. And, you know, curiosity is a really important, wonderful thing, whether or not we train it on ourselves or other people. So,
yeah. And we learn it as kids. And I think as we grow older and as adults, a lot of us sometimes lose it a little bit just because our lives are so busy today, mm-hmm. that sometimes we, you know, we're just finish one thing and we move on to the next without fully sitting back and taking it in. So that mm-hmm. is some great advice for our listeners. Thank you. So thanks, everyone. Thank you so much for being a guest today. Grateful to have you on the podcast. We'll see everyone next time on Wisdom of Women.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Wisdom of Women. I hope you enjoyed our conversation and gained some valuable insights and inspiration. How to connect with me and our guest today, as well as any links, can be found in the show notes. Please share this episode with your friends. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review, as it helps us reach more women like you who are seeking to learn from successful women leaders. Stay curious, stay hungry, and always push forward. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest. Until then, keep chasing your dreams, and we'll see you next time on Wisdom of Women.